jurisdictions, the old law was, any misdemeanor, no matter how, what its degree of violence or what its degree of relationship to the resulting death was enough to tie a man to manslaughter if death actually ensued. And the examples of truly examples, some given in the Model Penal Code, where the guy pushes another through a screen door and he cuts his thumb and dies of tetanus. Manslaughter. Well, that's ridiculous. What was the nature of the act when he pushed him through the screen door? Was it a reckless creation of a homicidal risk? Was it reasonable to say that it was? And the jury would say, no, not in that case. Well, was it a negligently criminal act to push him through the screen door? And the jury would say, probably not in that case. So the man is just guilty of battery, the misdemeanor of battery, and he's excused from the homicide charge. The misdemeanor manslaughter rule imposed the old concept of strict liability, again, very much like the felony murder doctrine.
The hemophiliac situation is in that area.
Yeah, right. So you get someone who's a bleeder, and he bleeds to death 7 days later. The question is, how reckless and how criminally negligent was the assault you made? Was it likely to result in death? And in that case, the jury could probably say, well, he had no possible way of knowing that fellow was a bleeder. Therefore, he's guilty of the battery, clearly, the assault and battery, but not guilty of the homicide. So in a sense, we're focusing, we're not doing away with misdemeanor manslaughter. We are simply changing the focus of how you consider what the act was. It's not strict liability. Now the state has got to show that it was reckless or criminally negligent, resulting in the death.
Well, with the operation of an automobile, a person under the influence, I'll say, which would normally, we think, give rise to this crime, and he would be acquitted of criminally negligent homicide, and that's going to be it in that case.
Mm-hmm. If he can convince the jury that what he did in that car wasn't criminally negligent, he's guilty of whatever it is. Driving while intoxicated or reckless driving, but not the harm that results in death. Of course, the intoxicated driver can conceivably be guilty of murder, obviously. Reckless indifference with extreme indifference to human life. If he drives downtown Salem here on Saturday and Christmas shopping and goes up on the sidewalk at 60 miles an hour, the jury could very well bring in a murder. The homicide in the automobile, I think, is just like the homicide resulting from the misdemeanor. The jury should look at it in the light of recklessness or negligence. We do away, by the way, with the old common law of crime. That is, we don't use the language of death resulting from an act done with intent for serious bodily injury. I forget what the exact phrase is. You're all familiar with that one. But we don't talk about that anymore because it's really the same problem. The act performed, which results in death, was it the reckless kind of act? Was it the intentional kind of act? Was it the criminally negligent kind of act that we'd expect to result in the homicide?
Mr. Chairman, I'm having Mildred get me some copies of that traffic safety report that talks about negligent homicide. You might want to take a look.
Remember, one of the big objections,
I asked them to send some copies over to us, and we had several of them arrive.
Their big objection was the number of deaths and the few prosecutions. I remember they really they had a handout and everything. They really struck that at that point very hard.
Right.
But they just weren't prosecuting.
It's hardly interesting. No, I used the bleeder on my examination in this area.
Did you?
Yeah, I think in Oregon, probably the one notable exception in the area of negligent homicide prosecutions was in Lane County, Bill Fry. I know Bill has prosecuted more negligent homicide cases than any other prosecutor in the state, and has had
the best conviction,
the best conviction rate by far. Yeah. He gave this is an aside here again, but. Gave an address to the national district attorneys on how to prosecute negligent homicide cases, and did a paper on it.
First, you import 12 members of Lane County, and then you
None of them
drive. Hire me as consultant.
And the only, as I recall, he only lost two cases in about 6 years, and both of those cases were tried to a judge, as I recall. He won all the jury cases.
There's a lesson there.
Well, gentlemen, I think that I have shot my bolt.
Okay.
I have a few arrows sticking out of
it. Well, let's gallop back to article number one. Article number one, or section number one, rather, of this article has been amended by the deletion of the word "the crime of" on the first and second line. Any comments, objections, recommendations, deletions? Not Mr. Haas moves the approval of section number one. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried. Section number two, the one on murder. We have amended the sub 2 paragraph sub 3 to C by adding dangerous or deadly weapon and then also changing D by doing the same. Any further comment or suggestion or criticism? Okay, Mr. Haas moves that we approve section 2 as amended. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The reason I keep sticking you.
I'm not moving three. I'm just waiting on you, baby.
You want that gavel for me?
Yeah, I'll take the chair.
Okay, you take the chair. All right. Mr. Hyde, turn the chair over to Mr. Haas.
No corrections or deletions or additions to section number three, I presume. Mr. Carson moves. Adoption of section number three.
Isn't there any way we could tighten that up a little, isn't it?
I'm gonna. George, if you need a vote, I'm gonna give it to you. Commission, but with great reservation, that worries me.
Well, you know,
I just see
the subcommittee on inchoate crimes, and I'm sure other subcommittees have done this. Where you're in doubt on these things, why don't you send it along with your caveat?
Yeah, that's what we've done.
Yeah,
kick it up.
But this is one that you're not sure of, but you think that it's an important enough issue that the commission at large ought to make a decision rather than the subcommittee.
That's okay. In my motion.
Yeah. What was that?
and then I'm not going to be there at that meeting. And Don can.
You're right.
Yeah,
I sense a certain defection from my fellow staff member here on this. Committee.
That's right. You're going to have to woodshed him a little bit here.
I'm
going to have to get a couple of good lawyers to read up some real good offers.
It makes sense. A whole bunch of things. I don't know where they're at, but yeah, here's what we're talking.
Mr. Chairman,
all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, I'll vote no. Passed. That's really interesting, Eric. The thing that worries me is that I just think that George, it'll be raised in every trial, and I can just, you know, I worry about the instructions that the court gives, and I can see this instruction given, and I can hear counsel argue brilliantly. You know, and I can see a jury saying in that jury room, well, he really, all the problems he had, he really felt that. I can see if we were sitting on the jury and sitting and talking about as we have today, maybe we would.
Yeah, well, my reaction to your concern is, I don't see anything wrong with that. The jury, in fact, wants to take that reaction to it. But I'm really, the longer I study criminal law, the more confirmed I am in the belief that the jury does the right thing, usually in this area. I don't know about civil law, I don't think about that, but I think I'm convinced that the juries in insanity cases and in these kind of cases where there are these emotional elements usually does the right thing. Because they're people. I don't know about the courts as fact finders, what they do, you know. But I think Jim Burns told me once that he heard a whole bunch of insanity cases, I think, with to juries, and he said in only one case would he have disagreed if he'd been hearing the case himself.
The only thing is that the jury is going to function within the framework of the instructions that the court gives it, and the instructions that the court's going to give under this are going to be far different and much more expansive and give them a lot more area to travel around in than they would now under provocation.
You don't think they do that right now, wandering back between murder and manslaughter?
Oh, I'm sure they do, but...
I see I'm going to have to work on you.
But this really bothers me. Well, I haven't been too reactionary about most of your proposals.
Well, no, I haven't been too radical about most of your proposals either.
You should separate the prosecutors, though, can't you?
Yeah.
When it really gets down to the nitty-gritty.
Okay. Well, do you want to continue?
No, go ahead.
All right. Section 4, any comments?
Oh, could I ask one more thing, Mr. Chairman, on this? Now, do you want to discuss the advisability of requiring any kind of a notice provision in here with respect to expert testimony?
Yes, why don't you bring that up? I don't know.
Is that in...
That's in 3.
Okay.
I think that we ought to bring it up and point it out to them, as well as pointing out this gross and extreme point.
Okay.
Section 4, Mr. Haas moves the adoption of Section 4. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Carried.
Wonderful. We're done before lunch.
Do you want, for the record, for the minutes, do you want any discussion about this bill that I was talking about?
Take a look at it. Is that the one
it's a House bill. 1562. And here's a copy of Senate Judiciary minutes on the bill.
And what they added to 091 was we added a paragraph 4, in addition to driving a motor vehicle in a grossly negligent manner, which is already in the law, and 2 is driving a vehicle that's defectively equipped, and 3 is driving a vehicle that was defectively loaded, 4 driving a vehicle under the influence of intoxicating liquor or narcotic drugs, and 5 driving a vehicle carelessly and heedlessly in willful and wanton disregard of the rights and safety of others, all come now under the purview of 163.091. And it's still in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Is that where we could find it now if we wanted to look for it?
I don't know whether it got out of committee or not. I'd have to check the calendar on that.
I think it did. I don't know that it did.
These minutes...
I mean, it didn't get out of the Senate.
But my recollection is that the thing that Jane Gerhart was trying to resolve, the question was there was some language in that bill about... a death resulting from violation of a traffic law or ordinance or something like this. And she was trying to define what they meant by the result of or the cause of, proximate cause or direct cause or... I think that's where they had the difficulty on it.
Referred to a judiciary. On the 6th of May.
Senator House.
Passed the House, 40-48.
How do you vote on that one?
I voted aye. As did you.
And of course, now that we have our broad definition of criminal negligence, which Oregon didn't have before except as a result of a bunch of confusing cases, we don't have to worry about this kind of bill anymore.
The names were Bassett, Davis, Dugdale, Gwynn, Hansel, McCree, Priestley, and Rogers.
That's a rather different group.
I bet you could go through one of those and not find that group together.
I bet you couldn't find any similarity or reasons for voting against it either.
True. Well, where do we go from here, Mr. Director?
Well, you've kind of taken me by surprise here. I didn't think we'd finish this quite so soon. Now, if you want to go ahead and work the rest of the day, we have other material we can go ahead on if you want to. But
what's your pleasure, Norman?
It's up to you, whatever you want to do.
I know,
as long as you're here.
Yeah, I'm sure you have things back at the office, and I'm sure.
How are we? The question is, how are we doing as a subcommittee for?
Get it all taken care of before Dave gets back in here.
Yeah. We'll take a vote on the three toughest subsections before Frost gets back.
That's the introductory material that the last subcommittee meeting commission brought up, and then the commission voted and decided that we would they would send it back to subcommittee to consider the proposed revision. This revision is based on ORS chapters 474 and 475, and what we've done in effect is to take the criminal penalty sections out of those two chapters and combine them into one article on the sale and possession of narcotics and dangerous drugs, which in effect leaves the regulatory provisions in articles chapters 474 and 475. The blue material that you find in the back of this article contains, on page 20, you'll find ORS chapter 474. Page 29 is chapter 475. And then the material that follows that just indicates what will remain after we have taken the criminal provisions out of those chapters.
28 you're looking at now? Where are you now?
Well, I was just explaining what all this blue material is in the back. This is the present law on narcotics and dangerous drugs, chapter 474 and 475. Now, what we've done in the revision.
Well, excuse me, let me make sure I understand.
Page
28 is what would be left of chapter 474.
No, page 20 is the beginning of ORS chapter 474. Page 29. Beginning of chapter 475. Mm-hmm. Then on page 37 is 474 with the criminal provisions taken out of the chapter.
Oh, I see.
And starting with page 45 is chapter 475 with the criminal provisions taken out. Now, the last page, which is page 48, is the Board of Pharmacy section, which lists the designation of dangerous drugs.
Well, now, do you want to go into section one?
Section one on page four.
Before you get to section one, I've got a question I'd like to ask. I don't know whether it's proper here or maybe later on, but what effect, if any, does your proposal have on what might be described as the Josephine County problem, or as some have described it, the Bow Amendment?
It would have none, because the reference we make to dangerous drugs in the proposed revision refers us back to in effect ORS 689-660, which is the authority for the Drug Advisory Council to designate dangerous drugs, and then that in effect refers us back to page 48, the Board of Pharmacy section, which
That's
is
the
their designation. This would in no way affect the procedure that the Board of Pharmacy follows in designating dangerous drugs.
Well, I don't know if it's proper to bring it up at this time, but it occurs to me that as long as we've now been charged by the full commission with rewriting or doing them, considering the thing, not necessarily rewriting, I wonder why we can't solve that problem, assuming that by the time we submit this to the 71 legislature, that the problem still remains. I'm uncertain as to whether or not it will still remain. I suppose Frank could probably tell us better on that, but it seems completely anomalous to me to have, let's say, upwards of 35 jurisdictions that go one way and another that goes another, and doesn't do a thing for law enforcement, does even less for the respect, if any, with which the work of this commission would be viewed by those upon whom it would chiefly operate.
Of course, I think the quickest way to remedy a situation such as that, and any other type of situation where you get Benton County law or Josephine County law, is to give the state the right to appeal. But then we could have
record again.
The
How about for the Christmas season? Let's play Christmas carols.
But well, I understand from the paper at least that the Board of Pharmacy is going to have another set of hearings to bring Josephine County within the law again. And I suspect that they're, particularly now that dangerous drugs are felonies and we have felony cases going, that the Supreme Court is going to get the chance to decide whether there are dangerous drugs around the state, the rest of the state. But I think as long as they have that procedure, the two hearings, we're always going to have that problem.
Could you, Jake, could you speak to that, to this question?
Yeah, I've I thought the simplest way to handle it would be for the statute defining dangerous drugs to define it as a list of drugs which are presently designated as dangerous drugs, and B, such other drugs as as the Drug Advisory Council may designate pursuant to chapter whatever it is.
This is.
I don't see why I can't say it specifically. We know lysergic acid isn't going to be taken off the dangerous drug list, for example. Why not just say it? And you don't get administrative law type challenges that way.
Yeah, this is going to be the problem, particularly now when dangerous drugs are felonies, where something has been made a felony by an administrative agency, more or less, by ruling. And I would think that that we should set out all the known dangerous drugs, and then any others that, like Jake said, any others that are designated by the Board of Pharmacy.
Well,
and then this would mean that each session of the legislature, that when something new one came on the market,
they could just crank it in and still leave the discretionary power in the interim with the
Board of Pharmacy, so that if something does develop between sessions, it can...
Well, let me ask this, both to Dave and Don, is there any... do you see that... any reason why we shouldn't do that, or do you feel it's beyond the scope of the re-referral?
I think Jake's suggestion is the only logical one we can use. At least it reduces the possibilities of the question coming up as it did in Judge Bowe's decision. And while I don't like this fluidity in the criminal law that would result as every 2 years of changing these things, as a practical matter, I'm not too sure I can see any other method of approaching it.
As a man who doesn't
no
drink,
one will ever be able to read the statute, of course.
As a man who doesn't drink, I hate to eliminate one LSD haven in the Supreme Court. Everyone's kicked somewhere.
What's your feeling, Don?
Seems very reasonable to me. I don't know what else you can do, really.
Can you could you draft an appropriate...
Oh, there's no problem there. On page 48, we have 29 dangerous drugs listed present as and this is current. And we can define dangerous drugs to mean those 29 articles and then another subdivision, and as Jake suggested on...
Jake, in line with your suggestion, is there a better method of having the drug designated as a dangerous drug than the present rather cumbersome procedure to...
It's sort of cumbersome, but I think there's some history there. The Board of Pharmacy did do it. And as I understand it, it was amended to allow for a Drug Advisory Council to do so because they felt that the designations, particularly for criminal purposes, should be made by a more broadly based organization than the Board of Pharmacy. And the Drug Advisory Council has not only a pharmacist or pharmacists, but, you know, lawyers and a doctor and that kind of thing.
It's under the Board of Health, isn't it?
I don't know.
I think it is, in recollection.
Which section, which section authorizes the Board of Pharmacy or the Drug Council?
We don't have that in the ORS 689-66 review. This committee to do
that.
No, I don't think so.
Well, the way you presently have it drafted, is it clear that drugs mean?
Well, we don't even have any definition of drugs.
No, well, just by incorporating them by reference under sub 1.
Oh, the definitions of being such and such and such and such by this article.
Mr. Chairman, it's a little different subject, but I'm wondering what was the decision made by the full commission relative to the offenses involving narcotics and dangerous drugs? I was a bit confused on the instructions that we received from the full commission.
Well, that's why I raised the question here.
In other words, they shipped it back to us.
With no direction?
Well, I think the direction was to... Well, you better tell us, Don.
Well, we could get the minutes from the commission meeting. Might be the best way of doing it. But really, it's very broad.
Well, wasn't the vote to go actually into that they want the narcotic and dangerous drugs things in the criminal statute, so there's that much change
not
to
necessarily
do.
Change
and then
in
any changes that were to be made, that was up to us and to government commission. So you still have your vote, Dave.
All right.
Well, I think that it was kind of the feeling, it may not reflect that fully in a minute, it's kind of the feeling that at least as to the general penalty structure, we weren't going to do much with that. But I don't know.
Well, I think that was implicit in that, in as much as the explanation that was given to the commission about our draft approach indicated, I think, that we weren't contemplating any. Big change.
Incorporate
in
into the proposed criminal code without doing substantial violence the provisions of 1838. That's on the bottom of page 4.
I see Judge Burns is questioning my wisdom again. Which is always a safe thing to do, by the way.
These minutes must be correct, then.
Well, you can't get hurt doing that. Yeah, we are unanimous. Okay, I'm safe.
Well, what is the consensus group? Should we adopt the Tanzer approach
to the definition of dangerous drugs?
Yes, as to the dangerous drugs.
I would move that we do. We adopt the Tanzer approach.
Any further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carried.
Now the same definitions that we're contemplating for our draft, we would want the same changes to be made in 474 and 475,
yes.
Whatever was appropriate.
Yes.
So that both would conform. Okay, because that would require a separate bill when we put this in. Or
you mean in the legislative process?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why would it be a separate bill?
Well, I mean, insofar as setting out any amendments to ORS, that is not reflected in our draft as such. In other words, this draft is not going to amend Chapter 474
and 475, okay.
So we have to set out those amendments separately.
I see. Yeah.
Now, also before we get into Section 1, I want to mention a personal point of view, which may or may not be appropriate in light of the re-referral. As long as we are revising the code, I have
troublemaker
proposed that we present to the full commission for its determination a revision which in effect removes marijuana from the category of narcotics, places it in the category of dangerous drugs. And again, I'm not sure that this is the appropriate spot for discussion to talk about it, but at the risk of being even more of a troublemaker than Cross thinks I am, I am convinced that an attempt ought to be made to be as non-hypocritical as we can. By that, I do not mean to impugn anybody, but simply to be realistic. And as nearly as I can tell in a fair amount of reading and study in this area, marijuana is not a narcotic within the definition of that, unless the legislature says it is. And while the legislature can stop the clock or turn it back or whatever, and they can say things are or not circles or squares or narcotics or wide highways or whatever, the fact of business is that marijuana is not a narcotic drug, and I think we ought to say so.
Second.
And my own personal feeling is that I don't intend to argue the matter anymore here today. I hope to have an opportunity to argue it to the full commission, and whatever decision they make, I'll be satisfied with. But and I don't know whether anybody wants to move the table or to tell me to shut up or jump out the window or whatever.
Rather than place yourself in the position of making such a motion, I'll make the motion so the chairman doesn't have to.
Well, the objections are twofold and probably obvious. The first is that while we are dealing with a medical definition, and I agree with you that probably medically marijuana is not necessarily a narcotic drug, but the problem is, if we get ourselves involved in medical definitions for everything, we're going to be nowhere. Responsibility would be a hash if we went to medical definitions and were being, as you call it, non-legally if we tried to use the definitions, we'd have a real problem. Secondly, and it's just strictly political, that if this revision gets ditched, it's going to be in an area that someone understands, and those two areas are sex and drugs. The first,
I don't
maybe
think they understand.
Sex, maybe, because it's within the purview of almost everyone's understanding, and drugs because they've heard so much about it. And if we start messing with anything that even looks like a step towards legalization of marijuana, a downgrading of its present criminal basis, we're going to have the entire roof. Chicken Little is going to be right. The sky is going to fall. And I think if we do that, I'd suggest we put it in a separate draft and a separate bill, because this thing will attract controversy like honey attracts flies. And I think even further than that, a little further even than your motion, my reiterated statement that we shouldn't mess with the substantive portions of the narcotics and drug laws at this time. We're crazy if we do. And I will scream and shout. Stand up on my constitutional right. All right, there's the obvious answer.
Well, as a practical matter, with the penalty provisions that we now have and what are proposed, it doesn't make any difference. We don't draw any distinction anywhere between narcotic and dangerous drugs, except where we have some measurements set out, then we're obviously, I think we're in trouble in a lot of these measurement things. But so the penalty, whether it's the penalty for marijuana, possession of marijuana, would be the same whether it's classed as a narcotic or a dangerous drug.
Yeah, I think Frank's right. For that particular offense, let's say it's criminal sale in the first degree or criminal possession or whatever it has to be.
As it is right now, it doesn't make
any
difference.
Well, I think that, I think that's one of the benefits of all the hard work that Dave and his committee did on 1838. They made it possible for us to call marijuana what it is. Because I would fully agree with him that at this stage of the proceedings, for a variety of reasons and the political reasons of which he's much better able to assess than I am, I wouldn't want to get the work of this commission jeopardized because of my notion of linguistic niceties. But the fact of business is, with the penalty structure of 1838, we can do this and not be subject, it seems to me, to a charge of downgrading. We're not downgrading.
Of course, to change this, we would have to not only just delete some things from 474 and 475, we'd have to amend 474 and 475.
I agree. Because the definition section says...
defining narcotic drugs defines marijuana.
Yeah, sub 18 says narcotics means opium, marijuana, and so forth and so on. And
well, I personally, if it weren't for these political considerations of the entire revision, would go much, much further in some of my ideas on what we should do about particularly users and treat them completely non-criminally. But I realize that's probably the death of the revision, so I'm not going to propose that. But I think that the full commission ought to at least have the option of making a judgment whether we pull marijuana out of a designation of narcotic drug and call it a dangerous drug. I think that's a minimum amount of guts we have here.
The one thing you lose
by that
is, as long
as we're statutorily defining the dangerous drugs, it wouldn't be too much of a problem.
From a legal standpoint, what you lose are all of the cases now that have been decided in many jurisdictions on the Uniform Narcotics Act. I don't know. Are we going to lose some good law that's been made?
I don't think it's
the one place you can find some law on the subject.
I was going to say, I object too to the to having to stand up all the time and say this horse is a cow because the legislature calls it a cow. It's kind of silly, but I don't think you've exhausted alternatives. It's no more a dangerous drug than it is a narcotic. It's marijuana, and it's pretty sui generis. You've got a third alternative. You have three statutes, one of which says you can't sell or possess narcotics, another one saying you can't sell or possess dangerous drugs, and a third saying you can't sell or possess marijuana. And provide appropriate penalties for each. You know,
that is correct.
I grant you can work with a statute that says, yes, marijuana is narcotic, but it's kind of just kind of unseemly.
Trying to explain it to a classroom full of kids.
You answer that, but from Representative Frost's point of view, if you're going to concern yourself with political implications, I think that might be more dangerous than the suggestion made by Judge Burns.
Probably
because the public might feel then that you are categorized in such a way that you can treat it differently. In other words, you can reduce the penalty on marijuana very simply then because you've got a separate statute on it.
Well, if you make an analogy, if you were, for example, grafting this onto the present law, have an option of making it a 10-year felony misdemeanor or a 5-year misdemeanor. You know, you can go either way.
Well, I'm not really sure that we need to take any action on it. I thought I would mention it because I, well, unless I'm persuaded more decisively than I have been so far, I don't see any reason why the full commission ought to vote it up or down. And I'm not at all unsympathetic to the considerations that Dave mentions, but do you think merely presenting it to them would jeopardize our work?
I would think it would.
Do I mean to the commission?
Well, that's the starting point, of course. This is where it gets picked up, and this is where the people begin to think and talk about it. If we want to do it, if we want to be idealistic, and I'm all for it, let's do it as a separate bill. Entirely. What you're saying, I think, is right, really. I can't disagree with the theory. It's the practice that scares me.
Of course, the life of the law is not logic.
But does it really make much sense to put in a new bill on a whole new criminal code, and right alongside it to Bill 8-1002 is to amend Bill 1001?
Oh, it's not. Well,
I mean,
it has precedent, whether it's logical.
Yeah, I know.
The insurance code contained five or six extra matters that the criminal law or the law improvement committee felt were too touchy to put into the insurance code. One of these was homeowners' policies, for instance. They were fairly well agreed. Now,
did the probate thing have similar satellites or appendages or whatever you want to call them?
I don't think so.
There were extensive amendments that. And some amendments that were proposed by the Law Improvement Committee after the bill was in,
mm-hmm.
but well, it was still in committee. But there weren't any rider bills on it or anything like that. So.
But the education bill, I recall, did in '65, and the insurance code in '67 had numerous of them.
Yeah, but the insurance code. I think that's right.
But the reason they did that was that they were highly controversial areas. They didn't want to ditch 4 years' work on a very controversial issue. Now, it's not very courageous, but it's eminently practical.
Well, my feeling is, seems to me this way, if the commission concludes that that's the best way to run a railroad, why, I'm entirely happy with it. It just seems to me that the matter ought to be put up to the commission.
I agree.
And I don't know if we need to, I'm not sure we need to have a motion or take any action here today, because clearly, whatever we do here today would be something that the commission would look at, and we're all big boys and able to express our view before the full commission.
Except that if you want to, you know, have the draft that goes to the commission reflect the true thinking of the subcommittee, then we ought to vote on it, I would think, and then amend our draft so that that would be the way that the commission would receive it.
That means the only thing to do is find out what Frank thinks. Because the other three of us have already stated our position. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, Frank. If you don't want to say, well, that's fine, too.
When have I ever been really afraid to say what I thought?
Well, I was searching my memory.
It doesn't matter what I think. It's a real question.
Would you prefer that we just bring it up at the time of the full commission?
Well, I think I'd almost, maybe in this case, agree with Dave.
Now you got me worried.
Now I agree with him. It scares him when he agrees with me.
Well, let's let the record show that. That's the first.
But when I agree with Dave on something, that probably that should cause him to go back and study all evening. But I think that they had a real argument on this, it being classified as a narcotic when medically it isn't, when there was an entirely different penalty structure as far as whether it's a dangerous drug or a narcotic drug. And now when it is the same and will be the same under the new code, that it really doesn't make much difference whether it's classified as a narcotic drug or whether it's classified under the dangerous drug. It's wrong, and it's the same degree of wrong either way. And the judges, in passing sentence, or not pass sentence, simply based on what it is. And so I don't think we need to get into the big argument. If they want to present another bill on it, that would give those who want to argue the marijuana should be legal a chance to argue it there here. So, but I think as far as we're concerned in the commission, I just leave it as it is.
Okay.
But as far as maybe something that the full commission should vote on, fine.
That's good enough. I guess we're now ready for section one, Roger.
It's hard to overcome reactionary pressure from Representative Foss.
Which I might add, I'm an expert in reactionary, radical. At least I'm told. Roger, again, before you get into this, mm-hmm. Now, this is the same thing we looked at before, obviously.
Yes.
This is not a redraft in lieu of or in pursuant to the commission.
I have some alternative suggestions in response to some of your objections on distinguishing by amounts.
That are in this draft?
No.
But they're coming.
Well, section 1, sub 1, we incorporate definitions. ORS 474-010 is on page 21. There are 22 definitions. We don't use many of them. We use subsection 2, position. Section 18, narcotic drug. And in effect, we use marijuana because it's included as a narcotic drug. Opium because it's included as a narcotic drug. The reference to 475.010 is the definition on page 30 of dangerous drug, but in view of the recommendation to define dangerous drugs, defining the drugs themselves, we wouldn't use that reference. In fact, amend 475.010 to conform to the definition by listing all of the dangerous drugs.
Mm-hmm. Well, even though we refer to 474.010 in its entirety, we're not in fact using all of it simply because we don't have sections, let's say, applicable to veterinarians or something like mm-hmm. that, wholesalers, dentists, and so forth.
The third reference to 475.615 can be deleted because in going over this I find that there's a conflict because 474.010 defines position and so does 475.615 and they're different definitions and the preferable one is in 474.010 and so the only reason that the third reference is in there is because of position. So we ended up with two different definitions of the position.
How did you let that one get by, Representative Frost?
Don't ask me to talk about logic as far as the statutes are concerned.
I guess
it also has
an
expense, doesn't it?
Yes, but we don't use that.
More screwball.
You may raise a point.
I think that's useful.
Well, our definition of cell pretty much covers the definition of dispense. Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder how we would fit in. How should we treat the fact that 010 sub 10 defines sale, and we define cells?
Yes, we define it differently.
Should we not specifically not incorporate sub 10? Won't that cause problems?
Well, I didn't feel it would because they're in effect two different words. At least we're using sales specifically. Where in the regulatory chapters they use the word sale.
Well, let us say, for example, you're prosecuting a
we don't use the word sale.
Well, but let's say you get an ambitious district attorney, as if such exist, and he wants to prosecute an employee for a sale made by an employer, and he points to 010 sub 10 and says, there's my authority. What is the court going to say, or what is the defense lawyer going to say?
Now, where do you get that? Whether it's principal, agent, servant, or employee.
Right, right. Suppose, in other words, you prosecute the manager of the Safeway store for a sale of marijuana made by one of his checkers. I don't know why I said Safeway store. I simply mean a principal agent situation. And the manager says, hold on, hold the fort. You can't prosecute me. And the prosecutor, ingenious prosecutor, says, you bet. Sub 10 is incorporated.
Well, the principal, of course, would have to have knowledge of the sale by the agent, and you'd be just as well to stand up and argue to the court. Principal accomplice in court crime situation for making him legally responsible, criminally responsible.
I think the reason for the definition in sub 10 is that it's a part of an appropriate regulatory scheme, mm-hmm. but I'm not sure it's an appropriate part of a criminal law scheme. And
I think you may have a good objection there, Judge. I think we could cure that by specifically mentioning which definitions out of 474010 and these others that we are incorporating.
Yeah,
just limit that. In other words,
many of them.
The definition of physician that appears in 474010 or whichever words that we need to incorporate, and that would exclude the rest.
You know, save the problems.
There's going to be a problem using these definitions in our criminal code and just referring to them by statute in 474 and 475 is that although I suppose the definitions will always be 474.010, they may sometime delete the definition of hospital, and all of a sudden our definition of cocoa leaves is going to be sale, and we're not going to.
Well, another alternative would be to state in Section 1 those definitions that we're using here.
I think that probably would be the best thing to do. As long as there's a bunch of them.
Can't you just pick out of 010 the ones we specifically want?
Yes. And the reason I didn't is because it's quite lengthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, for example, the definition of marijuana.
Well, but I mean by reference.
Oh, I see.
Well,
see,
but if we do it by reference, and that's what I say, suppose they amend this thing like they did to the contributing statute. They threw in another section so that, and the statute on contributing, used to be statute on contributing, said sections A through E of ORS such and such, and then they amended, added another one in, A, B, C, D, and E, and so all of a sudden E, what used to be E is now F, and no longer comes within the contributing statute. That whenever they change or mess around the definitions here, they have to make sure that they change the thing back in the criminal code.
I suppose maybe this would be a matter for the legislative council to pick up at the time, but I don't have any objection to bringing the sections over in their entirety rather than by reference. More typing.
Yeah, we can do that, and of course, assuming that we pick a definition that's in there now, and then that...
You won't run into any problems about you trying to change.
You may end up with some inconsistency later on if say, one of the definitions that we have lifted then is amended some other time. Then you'll have one definition of opium in one place, and maybe a separate someplace else.
Well, again, presumably, though, legislative council would pick that up.
Yeah.
I don't feel very strongly on it either way. What do you fellas think?
It's a job for legislative council?
Yeah, that's right. And this is one of the things to do with any
bill. Which is easier for legislative council to, if we bring them over entirely or if we bring them over by reference?
Who cares?
It's their job.
I don't think it'd make a great deal of difference to them, frankly.
Well, what is your...
I'll talk to them. I can ask Kathleen about it.
All right. Well, can we agree to do it this way? Bring over, either by reference or in their entirety, the specific subsections we're talking about. Further discussion on section one.
You mean sub one? Or section one?
Or... Well, all of section one, I guess it's all open to discussion.
Well, my only comment is on sub two, as ounce.
Well, so it's the definition of ounce is dependent upon retention of the degree structure we have
okay.
now, where we...
start early?
cells, sub three is a very broad definition of cell, and it conforms to...
Is the inclusion in unlawfully of a violation of the federal statute, or is that new?
I'm glad you spoke to that. I had that marked down to ask about. Why do we say unlawfully means in violation of federal law? Are we not sweeping into the kitchen all of the federal violations? And do we really want to do that?
That's retained from our present.
Yes. Matter of fact, I had that circled. I don't know.
Sure.
Yeah, it's
Well, the 474020 doesn't say that.
This is kind of like adopting the federal tax system, you know, as we've done. Problem is you don't have control over the change.
You see, in the present statute, the reason we define federal narcotics laws is that when narcotics drugs include anything that is defined by federal law to be narcotic. But in your 020, which is your meat and potato section, it doesn't say that that it's a violation to sell or possess in violation of federal law, whereas this does. And I'm not sure we really want to do that. Among other reasons we might not want to do it is because if Sid Lezak finds out he's got this and he's swamped with draft cases, he won't prosecute any narcotics cases. You kick them all back to the state.
As a
practical matter, that's almost the situation.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. But there's a few of them that he, where they can't make a state case out of it for some reason, or it's a real big deal. I forget the criteria. They'll take it. But suppose, for example, they say it's a violation of federal law to bring it in San Diego without a stamp on it or whatever it's supposed to be. Why should we be prosecuting that? As a matter of state law.
Well, I thought that's where you'd pick that up, Roger, from on with respect to these statutes on causing another to become addicted and that sort of thing.
No, it's just that some of the regulatory provisions in, for example, 474 and 475.
474 or 190 might be up.
Incorporate reference to federal law, like 0547405O. For example, they provide the duly licensed manufacturer wholesaler may sell narcotic drugs to any of the following persons on special written order is required for the federal narcotics law. 060. Has to be sold under the federal narcotics law. But of course these would still, those references remain in the regulatory code in any event. But I had some thoughts after that.
Why is it necessary to use the word unlawfully, let alone to define it?
In the definitions?
Yeah, well, I mean, for example, your section three, Section 2 person commits the crime of criminal sale of drugs in the second degree if he knowingly and unlawfully sells a narcotic.
Well, we tend there to incorporate.
Yeah, every pharmacist takes out
your drug list.
You gotta take them out.
Well, are there some exemptions under federal law that don't exist under state?
Never had one raised. Well, on rereading 474 and 475, all federal law that's applicable in the regulatory area is contained in those regulatory provisions. But there's no direct reference made in the criminal sections to federal law. So that perhaps we should not make it here.
Well, there's some. Well, what is the. What?
We're going to diminish Frank's jurisdiction here.
There's some drug that's a Class A narcotic federally. And I can't think of.
Yeah, but we don't use the Class A terminology,
no,
do we?
No, we don't.
At least formally we don't.
No. But on this drug, we had a guy using a forged prescription to get this. And there was a variety of ways in which it's always better to have more than one theory. And one of them was because of the federal.
Yeah, Frank's right. If you're looking page 21.
And I can't find it now as to how it was that I was going to work in it. Something because it was classified as a Class A narcotic under the federal law, that this was one of the ways we were going to make it a violation.
Well, you see, our definition of narcotic drugs now on page 21 includes any drug to which the federal narcotics law may now or hereafter apply.
Now, where is that? Which one?
Sub 18.
So in effect, the federal government, by classing a drug as a narcotic drug, would make that.
Yeah, and that was always. I really didn't want to use that one. But if I couldn't come in under it being a derivative or salt because it's chemically almost indistinguishable, but it's an artificial. That I was going to use that.
But taking violation of federal law out of the definition wouldn't affect that. In other words,
taking it out here.
Sub 18. No, I'd leave it in sub 18. Mm-hmm. Satisfied.
But taking
with that.
It out over here in our definition is unlawful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that. We don't define possess anywhere, and the old statute says possess or have in custody and control, which makes it somewhat broader than possess, and of course we keep getting the Gordonier case thrown at us in possession of marijuana cases, but because that possessor having the custody and control, you get around that argument. But here in our statute, we just use possess, and we don't say what possession is. And possess, at least under the Gordonier case, means to possess for your own use to the exclusion of all others.
Do we have, Don, in the general definition section, do we have possess?
No. And we've either got to define possess or say possess or have under his control.
I think in one of our drafts in theft, I think, we use the term actual or constructive possession. I don't think we've defined possess any place that I can recall. I'll take a look.
Well, why don't we wait till we get to section 4 to go into that?
Okay.
Sounds like you got gored on one of those cases.
No, I've never gotten gored on, but I have to argue the same thing every time, and it gets kind of a little bit irritating.
Gotta be horrible for you to argue.
Listen, I'll take that back. We did define
it. I'm not going to say that I'm not going to lose.
We did define in our last draft on general definition.
Possess?
Yeah.
What's it say? Does it make Frank happy?
Possess means to have physical possession or otherwise to exercise dominion or control over property.
Yeah. To the exclusion of all others.
Well, that isn't in there.
Oh, it isn't. Let one slip by.
State versus Dixon said there's no exemption for thieves who run in gangs. That sort of challenges me.
Anybody desire to move with respect to the words or federal law?
I move we delete the words or federal law from sub 4, section 1.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Any other suggestions or comments on section 1, any of the subsections?
Only the reservation as to ounce, as it applies to later degrees of the...
Well, before we go on, is anybody bothered by the words dispose of in a definition of sell?
Like throw away?
Well, it's dispose of to another, though. I think that...
Would come within the present definition of dispense.
Where does that come from? That comes from some of the other statutes, doesn't it?
The present statute is sell, possess, dispense, and under the definition of dispense, if I give you a drug, I'm dispensing it without the exchange of money.
Now, of course, this says sell means to give also.
Yeah, give or dispose. But generally, what's the definition of dispense? Dispense includes distribute, leave with, give away, dispose of, or deliver.
Well, that wouldn't really make any difference then, would it?
Mm-hmm. No,
I mean, that isn't any substantive change.
No.
Okay. Any other discussion on section 1? There's no objection and subject to Representative Cross misgiving.
Reactionary
about two
comments.
We'll treat 1 as being approved. Sub 2, or section 2 rather. Roger.
Criminal sale of drugs is in the second degree, which just states the basic offense. A person commits the crime of criminal sale of drugs in the second degree if he knowingly and unlawfully sells a narcotic or dangerous drug. We've got a number of defined terms there. Unlawfully, narcotic drug, and dangerous drug.
Maybe you want to discuss 2 and 3 together. Do you think we should?
Mm-hmm. Section 3, which is criminal sale in the first degree, sub 1, sale of a narcotic or dangerous drug to a person less than, this is Ms. Kennedy, 21 years old. That could be revised down. Or, sub 2, sells in one transaction a narcotic or dangerous drug consisting of, and then A through D set out certain specified amounts. A, 1/4 ounce or more of heroin. B, 1/2 ounce or more of any narcotic drug other than heroin. C, incidentally B would include marijuana. C, 50 capsules or more of one or more dangerous drugs. Or D, 50 or more cigarettes containing marijuana. This is the approach that been used by Michigan and New York, although they have gone farther. They have 3 different degrees, and on their 2 higher degrees, they specify varying amounts, in other words, larger amounts up to the first degree.
Mr. Chairman, this is probably the time to discuss what our approach is really going to be to this thing. The directive from the full commission was a broad one, but it did include that there be no substantial, what are those beautiful words? That we would do nothing which would do substantial violence to the provisions of House Bill 1838.
Did they define those terms?
No. Sounds like my words.
Yeah,
and I'd be happy to define them for you if you like.
Sounds to me like the law and order crowd.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's us too.
Be flexible. But I really think that we're getting into degrees and differentiating sale and possession in separate statutes, and if we're going to get into amounts, weights, whatever it may be, that we are doing substantial violence to House Bill 1838. And in line with our eminent subcommittee chairman's comments at the full commission meeting, I do agree that we should, if we do engraft the criminal parts of chapters 474 and 475 into the criminal code, that we should probably use the regulatory parts where they are. And I'd go along with that. But I think we are doing substantial violence by the draft that we have in front of us. Where have I heard that before?
Yeah. Well, the alternative I had was Section 2 would remain the same. Section 3 in the first degree would be a person commits a crime of criminal sale of drugs in the first degree, if, et cetera. He sells narcotic and dangerous drugs to a person less than, and I've got in brackets, 18 years old. In other words, we would not make a distinction based on amount. In other words, we'd have an aggravated offense on criminal sale to a minor.
You're in statutory rape problems, not knowing the age here.
Mistake of the age would be a defense.
Say something that might be kind of long, but I'm against the whole draft, and now's about as nice a time to say so. I mean it quite disrespectfully.
Oh, we know how you mean it, Jay. Put that down on the record.
I didn't mean that at all.
The headline, Doug. Attorney Solicitor General states...
One, there is no reason to revise simply to revise. Should revise if there is a reason to revise. Secondly, while criminal law may not be a very successful approach to the handling of drug matters, we do deal with it in the criminal law, and I'm not satisfied that there is anything unsatisfactory in the present statutes. They seem to be as workable as anything else. Three, I am against the division into separate offenses of sale and possession for many reasons, and not just to convenience the prosecutor, but primarily because the bigger the man is in the traffic, the more likely he is to be charged with possession rather than sale. The smaller he is in the traffic, the more likely he is to be charged with sale, because a college hanger-on will more likely sell a marijuana cigarette to a vice squad officer than will somebody who's higher up in the chain. Judge Burns, you've tried Mr. Spicer, for example. Who's a pretty
They'd never make a sale case on Spicer.
Could never have bought from him, and yet he was a very high-ranking sort of narcotics, or at least very active.
Well, he's one of the biggest dealers in town. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Does the judge even know that?
Even the jury now. Three. Or because of that, I think it's better to treat them the same with similar penalties and provide for flexible penalties within the statute. That's what we have in the law as amended in 69. Three, if we do get into revision, the job of revision is, I think, to simplify. That's the need for revision. Whereas this complicates, it seems to me directly contrary to the purposes you hope to serve by revision. Four, the distinctions made in the draft are extremely difficult in the real world. Example, to a person less than 21 years old, you can get, I think, into the same problems as the commission did with statutory rape, wrestling with the problem of the fellow who really thought he looked, or she looked like she was 16, but it turned out she wasn't, and you really want to base your criminal liability on that, or do you want to want the judge to take that into consideration in setting the appropriate penalty. Also, you can get just as bad an apple, and you can get a fellow who's selling to kids all the time, but the chances are, if you get him in on a sale, he will not have sold to a, the charge will not be based on a sale to a kid, it'll be based on a sale to a narcotics officer, or a vice squad officer, few of whom are under 21, if any of them. When you get into amounts, that too is difficult. Think of all the fellows that you catch on their way to the toilet, you know, to dump it. How do you prove amount? When we talk about heroin, heroin is cut by the time it gets down to the street. The lab testing is for the presence of heroin. The quantitative measure would be extremely difficult. Now, if you sent a cap down to the police lab, a cap of heroin, you said, how much heroin is in here, they'd be in a hell of a bind to try and determine that, if they can. I don't know if they can. I know they're not set up to, and I don't see any reason why they should be set up to. The same with the 50 caps. The only question would be whether they got to the fellow just before he hit the toilet or just after he hit the toilet during a raid, you know, and the degree of crime shouldn't depend on that.
And dangerous drugs will always come in capsules.
And they don't always come in caps, that's true too. That could be cured by, you know, by a little more general definition. But 50 or more cigarettes containing marijuana, well, I won't talk about that because it also includes half ounce in the definitions. What I'm saying is that the present statutes are very, they cover a huge magnitude, a huge range of individual sorts of situations. And dealing everywhere, dealing from, you know, the kid on the street who's caught with a roach in his pocket, up to Vito Genovese, who probably under this, I don't know what degree of crime he would be guilty of, prosecuted under this. And, but yet the law is flexible enough to deal, and particularly now with an amendment as to sentencing, it does allow the judge to apply the statute in a manner appropriate to that individual case. And I don't think that by arbitrary distinctions within the statute, you can really make it more suitable for application. I don't see I don't see great problems in the present statute which have to be revised. Well, I'll shut up now for 15 or 20 minutes. Those are my views.
Mr. Tanzer has very explicitly stated my incoherent objection.
I was going to ask you if you wrote that for me.
Pretty good argument.
That's
well, I'd certainly say this, that one of the things I had marked as a question, not on the details really, was 50 or more marijuana cigarettes, that really is not a realistic distinction to draw.
I've never seen such a case.
There's only one case I've ever seen where purely through just complete coincidence, this fella had rolled up, and I don't remember whether it was 50, but there were well over 10 or 20 anyway, marijuana cigarettes. And curiously enough, he had one of these old-time machines that you use to roll your own on a machine, you know.
Making a big comeback these days, yeah.
And, but very seldom, at least in the experience I've had, do you run across cases where they roll up that many ahead of time. You know, you just don't do it. It's true that you've got your 1/2 ounce so that if he's selling a sizable quantity, you probably catch him under the 1/2 ounce. But just 50 or more cigarettes is not a reflection of
the thing. Is when you say cigarettes too, you got the situation like. Well, we got one baggie one time that a kid
one
had,
half ounce
and he had rolled them all. And out of one lit, he had probably 30 to 40 cigarettes. They were pretty dang small cigarettes, but he rolled that many out of a baggie. But these machines, they roll a nice, neat cigarette. The paper is stick'em, lick'em paper, you know, so you can make a nice, neat cigarette.
That's
out
for
of
the
there.
Fastidious user.
Like Frank's me.
And we did find here just the other day a guy up in the dorm that was apparently was selling in the dorm there, and he had between 20 and 30 cigarettes rolled with the machine. We got several of those, you know, nice little antiques, but you can go down any one of these psychedelic shops and buy them. And that's because he was selling probably in the dorm, just selling one cigarette or two cigarettes because nobody wanted to buy a whole lid. And so you really, 50 cigarettes, it'd be more realistic down to 5 cigarettes if you were, but how large is a cigarette?
Yeah, on the other hand, your half ounce,
you're just trying to eliminate the guy who's in mere possession, I think that you'd find that quite often people are in possession of more than that just for their own use and are not selling it. So I think Jake's argument is probably very valid.
Maybe you should use the word lid here and define it in that.
Yeah. Or a matchbox.
Well, I think his argument about 1/4 ounce of heroin, I know that some of these others say 1/8 ounce of heroin, I think that presents some problems. I suspect you'd end up with a construction that, so long as the balloon, let's say, contained a 1/4 ounce or more of powder, and so long as the lab technician could say that it's positive for heroin, you'd probably make out a case. I don't know, but I suspect that'd be the construction.
You could rephrase it to say a 1/4 ounce of any substance containing heroin, mm-hmm. or something like that. But yeah. But again, the question comes back, why? Yeah. Why is that a good distinction of degree of crime?
As a matter of fact, I forget the amounts now, but the amounts of actual heroin in these caps are much, much less than this. You're talking about milligrams and not... Yeah.
If he had to say 3/16 of an ounce of pure heroin, he'd have one heck of a lot of heroin.
And of course, one of the things that you find is that so frequently the sales that are made are of a single dosage or single situation. True, some of them will be that they'll buy enough for all day and maybe 3 or 4 fixes, but so often they won't. They'll just buy enough for one. So it's likely that the purchases that are going to be made by the vice officer will be, even from an active heavy seller, will be small amounts, 1 or 2 fixes and that sort of thing.
For that matter, a dealer generally will keep his stuff cashed away, and he'll carry only a little bit, or even more frequently, he'll go get
I don't think you're really, all you're going to do is make the organized seller conform to what you've done here in your statute.
Yeah, you may accidentally catch some kid that doesn't know what the heck he's doing, just like a check writer writing an $80 check. I mean, the pro, he's always $74, you see. Yeah. He's not going to write one over.
Yeah, well, this approach, of course, is based on the states of Michigan and New York, who are facing problems of much heavier traffic in narcotics than we are in Oregon.
Yeah, but I think Jake's right. The Oregon statutes have not been that bad.
Well, I think the only place they've been bad are in some counties where there's a very, very harsh attitude, and they'll want any offender as an example. And you do get some kids in simple possession who are given really stiff sentences, which may be approved of by the commissioner, by the legislature generally, but it doesn't happen to fit my philosophy. So there is, I mean, you know, I must confess that there's some unevenness, but I still tend generally to providing as much discretion to the judge or ultimately the parole board, perhaps, if we have indeterminate sentences as possible.
I would agree with what Jake says as far as what we should do with our narcotic drug statute, except for one thing that bothers me. Is how will this be classified when we come to the penalty thing of it? I feel that the present penalty of 10 years or misdemeanor is a proper thing to have. Now, I don't know penalty structure, whether we're going to have such a class of felony that could carry a maximum of 10 years and yet could also be treated as a misdemeanor. I would envision that probably most of those felonies that could also be treated as a misdemeanor would probably be down in the category of a 5-year maximum. And if that's going to be the situation, then sale should be taken out of this category and put up where you could have that at least a 10-year maximum. This is the thing that bothers me.
Well, of course, Frank, I don't think that I don't think there was any feeling at all among the full commission that they wanted to make any particular change in the recent bill in 1838.
Yeah, this
now it may be that we, when we get to sentencing, it may be that for purposes of clarity and overall consistency and so on, we might make some changes in there. I don't know, but I didn't understand that it was sent back to subcommittee with the intention of making any real changes in the present general notion of it can be an indictable misdemeanor with a maximum of 10 years on anything, sale or possession of anything.
But no, I don't think there was that either. It's just that at least the way I envision our penalty structure, I mean, when you go through, you're just going to say, okay, burglary in the first degree is a class A felony, or I suppose homicide would be class A, so a burglary would probably be down to class B, and we'll have a class C and a class D felony, and then they go through just to attach one to it, and the life, 25, 15, 10, and 5, rather than all of some of these ones have 7, 4, 3, 2, and one of these penalties. Now, whether a 10-year penalty, say, would be maybe a class C felony, would also have the misdemeanor option, I don't know. Or maybe we could have it be a class C2 or something like that, so that you know that it's got the...
B1.
Yeah.
That's the vitamin.
but I mean, that's the thing that my only concern in leaving it all together, if in attaching it its final class what felony, I think it, I agree with what the legislature did last time in making it treated as a misdemeanor.
Well, Roger, what do you think of Jake's philippic?
Well, as I understood it, you would recommend, for example, deletion of sections 3 and 5 and combining, in effect, section 2 and 4.
No, I would suggest abandoning the draft entirely and simply moving the present statute along
that's
with
a
such necessary definitions or cross-references.
Right.
I would move that the staff be directed to include in the criminal sections on dangerous drugs and narcotics only those present criminal sections contained in chapters 474 and 475 without doing substantial violence. Bill 1838. And really, I think Jake is right. You know, just scrap it, period. And then the administrative decision is what is criminal and what's regulatory. And I assume there's probably got to be some cross-referencing between the two of them. And
well,
also, we're going to end up with, we're going to have inconsistencies in style as a result of doing this, I'm certain. But I really don't see any great problem in that. It may look like a gold fish and a red fish bowl, but if we have to do it, fine. Inconsistency.
Block that metaphor. Well, of course, Jake's theory, if it's proves to be persuasive, would still leave, it seems to me it would apply essentially to 2, 3, 4, and 5. It'd still leave, perhaps might leave room for 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10,
yeah,
so forth, 10, 11, and 12.
Well, those are from our
that's
existing law.
Existing law,
anyway.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Just been restated to conform to our style, is all.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing, just a comment on what the Section 8 here would, I don't think any longer we can use the term drug addicts on frequenting.
drug promotion, because you find very few.
Yeah, I agree
with dangerous drugs and with
use the term users in place of addicts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, I restructured that. Section 8 doesn't read too well.
Well,
can't we
just have make crime anybody who sells, possesses, etc., any narcotic or dangerous drug in violation of chapters 474, 475? Bring those into here so that it'll be in the criminal code. I would rather see it in the criminal code. If we're just going to take the exact language and move it over to where we have a closure,
doing great violence,
some type of bowl.
Was it sunken bowl? Was it
the redfish bowl?
Well. if the Tanzer theory prevails, I suppose the thing to do would be to bring 020 and the comparable section 475, just bring it over and maybe do a little bit of pruning on the language, but essentially so that it look a little more like the revision and leave it the way it is. A person commits the crime of commits a crime if he possesses or sells and so forth, whatever that language is.
Mm-hmm. And just throw in narcotics and dangerous.
Seems to me that it
we should also bring over the obtaining a drug unlawfully, because that's quite a problem.
We've got section 9. Is,
well, we've got obtaining in 9.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. We should bring over some of these.
Well, I don't know. It's Don. What do you? What's your Don Blatt? What's your thought on the matter?
Well, that certainly isn't going to be any insurmountable problem for us to